Brad the other day.
I love the new countdown. Tom Ackerman with you, Bernie Miklas, the Gas House Gang from KMOX, KMOX.com, all of our streams, including KMOX Sports on YouTube. That's a must follow along with the Bernie Show. Bernie Miklas is with me. I love that new countdown. This is my first show of the week. So the countdown is for those of you who watch on video, those of you listening to us in podcast form or on radio after the fact. You get it every day. Monday through Friday, the Gas House Gang. But that looks pretty cool from our producer, Drew Young. Bernie, good to see you. It's been a week of assignments for me. It's great to be back on board with the Gas House Gang.
You were, we were just talking before we rolled on this, and you were everywhere. I mean, you did how many different kinds of sports? You did Cardinals baseball. You did Blues pregame, I believe. You did the Missouri Valley Conference game. Am I missing anything?
My mom was the one who pointed out, I said, you know, I did four cities in 4 days. She goes, and three sports. So that was kind of cool.
Let me embarrass you. What I told you off camera, I'll say on camera. This just shows how talented you are, but also how reliable you are. And the fact that you are so well-versed in so many different sports, producers, whether it be to give you just a normal assignment or it's like, oh, we got to go to the bullpen here. You know, what do we do? They know that Tom Ackerman will deliver every single time. So you should be really, really proud. And I know how hard you've worked. So congratulations on becoming a go-to guy when it comes to play-by-play and hosting assignments on television.
Well, thank you. And I texted my friend Alexa Datt and, you know, checked on her. She's doing much better. She was just ill this week. She'll be back at it. In no time, she should be right back at it. So I was happy to fill in for her. She's a super talent and even better person. The great crew over there at FanDuel Sports Network. So here on the KMOX side, we're busy. I mean, we're closing in on the start of the season. March is upon us. That starts tomorrow. And the Cardinals have been playing for a week. So before we get into, there's a lot I want to get into here. Ken Rosenthal has a story out in The Athletic. We'll touch on that in just a moment. But let me just get your overall thoughts on the club here from what we've seen. And I've been paying attention, watching these games as well. Had the game on Tuesday, as you know, and the Cardinals are playing right now. They're taking on the Astros. We're paying attention to what they're doing. What are your thoughts?
Well, as you know, Tom, yeah, I'm always a little bit reluctant to sort of attach too much meaning or significance to stats, right? For obvious reasons. Although I've said, I always like to see young players put up stats because they've got something to prove, unlike established veterans who are just trying to get ready. And so I'll say this, you have to like what we have seen from the young starting pitchers, two of whom, McGreevy and Matthews, will be in the picture. They'll be on this team in 2025. What capacity, we don't know. I think also, and we've talked about this with Matt Pauly, you know, the Cardinals will have like three bullpen jobs, maybe four bullpen jobs open, depending on some decisions. And I'm not saying all of these guys down there are like going to become the next Todd Worrell or Trevor Rosenthal. So I'm not saying that at all. Mm-hmm. But what the Cardinals need in their bullpen is a lot of swing and miss. They need guys who throw hard, who have nasty breaking pitches and can miss bats. Just in terms of that profile, the Cardinals seem to have a pretty promising collection of those kind of arms in camp. Tecoa Arobi, Ian Bedell, there are others, but you can see the talent. We don't know how that talent will translate, but they needed that element to their team. And they have some guys, I think, that'll be part of their bullpen mix. I don't, other than Victor Scott, who has been phenomenal, I don't really have much to say about their position players, although you like what you've seen from Jordan Walker. And what I really like is it's obvious that Brant Brown has established, the new hitting coach has established a connection with, well, all the hitters, but especially Walker and Gorman, who were so important to 2025. So off the top of my head, man, that would be it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, the one that jumps out to me, obviously, is Victor Scott. I mean, he hits the home run. He had the triple, which might have been wind aided. I mean, it should have been a fly ball that was caught out in center field. Fortunately, it didn't look like Lo Perfetto. I didn't get an update on that actually after the game, come to think of it, but he walked off the field okay, hurt his neck, banged into the wall, turned into a triple, but the home run was a no doubter. I mean, he crushed it. And then he stole two bags yesterday. So, you know, he's making a bid for that center field. He's a super talent and a great guy, and I hope he does really well. The other one's Arenado, and I know it was just one day.
Sure.
Arenado launching a home run is kind of a big deal because of the slow start that he had. So he went in, got some work. He was hitting those, you know, softer balls that were being thrown at a high speed, really got some, his timing down. And then first inning, boom, he hits a 92-mile-an-hour fastball over the wall. Then he hit a double on a cutter that went 108 off the bat. And he told Daniel Guerrero, the Post-Dispatch, and I'm assuming some other writers were standing around, but I was reading Daniel's story, that's the hardest hit ball he's had in like over a year. That seems significant to me. So that tells me that some pieces are coming together for him. You know, it kind of begs the question here, and I really want to dig into this today also. We'll talk Rosenthal here in just a moment. But
sure.
I get asked the question everywhere I go, and I know you do too. Are the Cardinals going to be good or not? And I think that's the million-dollar question that they're asking themselves also. It's a very simple question, but it's a complicated answer. My answer is if Arenado gets back to what he used to be, he's only 33, I think they could be dangerous. If Contreras is better than he has been, and that's kind of what they're betting on, putting him at first base, I think they could be better offensively. If they're just a little bit better than they were, actually they needed to be a lot better. But if they're better offensively last year, they're probably a playoff team. I wouldn't count them out in the division if those two go. And then obviously you need Gorman Walker, Newt Barr, and the younger guys to take a step.
Yeah, listen, I've been I've gotten blasted by actually by some fans on my YouTube channel, and that's okay. I welcome all opinions. I mean, let me have it if you disagree. But I haven't made any predictions about Arenado specifically, other than to point out that Dan Zimborski, who does the Zips forecast for Fangraphs, you know, has Arenado raising his slugging percentage this season to .425. That would be a pretty big increase over last year. And I'm just going to leave it at this. I mean, well, two real quick things with him. The fact that he worked on all of these training exercises very specifically to improve his hand speed and his arm speed and, you know, just more flexibility, quicker to the bat, quicker to the pitch. Mm-hmm. That can only help him because he's had a slow bat. And the other thing is, I was of the opinion that Arenado wasn't cooked, but it was kind of like, geez, I don't think I should expect too much from him. All right, now you know why I do all this research. I am crazy. I spend, and this I don't mean this to be self-serving, right? But I'm fanatical about research, and there's a reason for it, because I learn things and I always want to learn things. So my opinion on Arenado and what he's capable of doing has changed, and it's changed for one reason. And listen, anybody can go to his splits for 2024 and 2023, and you'll see what I'm talking about. His numbers at Busch Stadium were very, very good. In fact, his power numbers at Busch Stadium were better than his power numbers on the road. My point is, Busch Stadium is one of the toughest yards for power hitting in Major League Baseball. If in a two-year decline, so to speak, if his power numbers at Busch are really good and they're better than what they are on the road, that tells me there's some juice left in that bat. That's all. So I don't rule out a bounce back season for him. And of course, every time I say it, I get slapped around. That's all right. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. I'm just saying I don't foreclose on that possibility. Listen, real quick, they're going to need Walker and Gorman to step up. They're going to need some of these other guys to either play more often, like Contreras, Newt Barr. They're going to have to get a really good year out of Donovan. Mason Wynn's going to have to continue to get better. the bullpen is the number one thing. I think the bullpen will sway them one way or the other. If they can come close to replicating the job they did last year with that bullpen, where they had the this fifth best record in baseball in one run games because of that bullpen. They were ranked sixth in the majors last year in terms of winning percentage when they've had when they had a lead through seven innings. They only lost one game all year after leading through eight innings. That's why they had 83 wins last year. If the bullpen is weak or weaker in a significant way, they're gonna have a hard time. I mean, in terms of like stacking up some wins. And the other thing, I told this to Wheels, and I'm sorry I'm talking so long. I told this to Wheels yesterday. I did a lot of digging into the numbers. The Cardinals were, as we all know, were horrendous with batting with runners in scoring position. They were so horrendous that to me, it was an outlier. And runners in scoring position type of stats can be very fickle from one season to the next. There is no way that they'll have as much batted ball luck in those situations as they did last year. So I just think naturally they will improve their performance when hitting with runners in scoring position. You know why? Because that's what baseball history tells us.
This is the Gas House Game for KMOX, absolutely, with Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. We're sponsored by Game Day Men's Health, but also Saliga Heating and Cooling. Tell us about them.
Yeah, and shout out to Game Day, man. We love them and appreciate them, too. Saliga Heating and Cooling has been taking care of the Miklases for 16 years. And, man, I have just the highest recommendations. And the gosh, I see Saliga trucks pulling up in our neighborhood, so the word's getting out. They don't not that they need the word to get out, because they've been serving generations of St. Louis family since 1927. I mean, it's the same family, continuously owned. Dan Saliga, tip of the cap to him, doing a great job. They do all kinds of work, heating and cooling, American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer. They're independent of that, but they will take great care of you. Take a look at the Priority Club. It's a maintenance program. And you'll learn a lot. I mean, you can save some money. We've done that, and it's really, really good. So anyway, you'll find the phone number there on the screen, but go to SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, and this independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer will take great care of you. And I know this because we have lived that with Saliga for 16 years.
That's well said. Great sponsor. We love our sponsors. We love our subscribers. Make sure you go to YouTube and subscribe to KMOX Sports. Then the Gas House Gang is going to for you. That's what I do. I watch it on my phone. On some of these road trips I had this week, I listened to the guys just plugging my phone into my car, and I could hear it whether live or taped. With all respect to the beat writers of this team, so Derek Gould, Post-Dispatch, Katie Wu of The Athletic, John Denton, MLB.com, Daniel Guerrero is also doing some beat writing for this team, and there are others that I'm missing here, Rob Raines, and, you know, there are some really good ones. When they write nationally about the Cardinals, it gets a lot of attention, and I know this because I already see that Kenny has 146 comments on his story, and there will be a lot more buzz about his story. The headline is, despite promised reset, Cardinals now find themselves stuck in the middle. This sounds like something we've been talking about for a while, and it is. But Bernie, when they talk about the Cardinals nationally, this is not a bad thing. I just talked to an MLB broadcaster this week who told me that they hope the Cardinals are good and can get back to being good because it's better for baseball when they are. They have a massive fan base. So you have to understand first and foremost that when Kenny Rosenthal writes about the Cardinals, he knows it's going to get readers. And he also knows that they're one of the more intriguing teams. Basically, what he is saying is that the Cardinals started by saying there's a reset. Actually, what he said was they promised a reset.
Right.
And then he said that they have now called this a transition after they couldn't trade Arenado. What he's saying is they should have traded Helsley and or Fetty. He's saying that the Cardinals didn't do this right, and perhaps suggesting that Mozeliak just didn't want to have a bad year in his final year, and so he's part of this too. Let me just throw this to you, and then we'll kind of throw our opinions out, and I'll start with you. But who is in charge of this team after all? Is it John Mozeliak, or is it ownership? Who called for this team to now try to be more competitive rather than wipe the slate clean?
It's a great question. I think it's both, which is not a cop-out answer, because I've been trying to tell fans for years that DeWitt, Bill DeWitt and John Mozeliak have had a partnership that's lasted a long time. And Bill DeWitt's part of every baseball decision and certainly a big part of the direction or the path that they choose. So it's not really one or the other. It's the DeWitt-Mozeliak partnership, okay? And, you know, these guys are now trying to correct something that they allowed to go bad, which was the minor league system and player development. They're putting a lot of money into that. So they are resetting, and gosh, is it overdue. And this is, to me, I've been fired up about this since they announced it, because I've been, like, calling for them to do this. So they're resetting it in a way where at the major league level, you're not going to see it yet. But it's a really important step. But I think that not to jump ahead, but I think that their messaging has just gone awry. I mean, you know, reset. Okay, now it's not a reset; it's a transition. And the transition, yeah, but it's more below the surface. And I was one that has said all along that I thought they should have gone farther with this. Like, I was a big proponent of trading Fetty and Helsley. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's just been my stance. And so a lot of what Ken wrote about, you know, I think locally we've all covered it and addressed it very, very well. It just, Ken Rosenthal is a huge, huge presence on the national scene. He has got tons of credibility. Baseball teams listen to him. Executives listen to him. Some fans will take shots at him. That's everywhere. But when he writes about the Cardinals, I think it's valuable, because even though we all know this locally, right? The media has been all over this stuff locally. When it's put out there nationally for someone with the influence of Ken Rosenthal, it's valuable, because now I think fans and media on the outside will have a much better read about what's going on this offseason, because it's not quite as simple as some people want to make it. Like, well, they didn't sign any free agents. Look, I've raised Cain about that. But the point is, when you're going into some sort of thing where you're committed to younger players, it doesn't make a lot of sense to, like, spend a lot of money this particular offseason, and they get whacked for that. I mean, I don't care about the payroll. I care about them maybe improving their depth from the outside. But I don't expect any big move, right? So anyway, those are just some thoughts. Sorry that I went a lot of different directions there.
It makes sense. And what I heard a criticism of them is they haven't spent a dollar on free agency. They haven't spent a dollar on free agency. And I'm sitting here all offseason, and now even more so, thinking, well, wouldn't that defeat the whole purpose? Like, why would you go spend on free agents? I don't understand.
Right.
Why would you go get free agents? The whole point was to create pathways for their own young players. Now, you could say that they messed up if they meant to trade Arenado and they couldn't get it done. Maybe not that they messed up the execution of it, but the planning of it. Because if you really took a step back, how many teams, maybe they overestimated how many teams would have a place for him. And the one that they got a deal done with, the Astros, he surprisingly, I think, turned it down. And obviously to them, they wouldn't have had a deal in place. So once that happened, now you pivot, to use an overused word, and say, well, I mean, let's go after it in a weaker division. And if we're out of it by the deadline, then we can start talking about dealing Arenado. Does his value drop at the deadline, or does his value increase at the deadline? You know, on the surface, you would say that it drops, but I don't know. I mean, maybe there are some teams that deal with injuries. What if a number of third basemen go down? What if a number of teams suddenly need right-handed hitting or need a good fielding third baseman or a veteran presence or whatever? What if they need a Ryan Helsley? Ryan Helsley's value, Ken tried to make the point that Helsley would have been more valuable to trade in the offseason. Totally get it. 49 saves, best reliever in baseball last year. What if he does it again? What if suddenly it's the deadline, the Cardinals are out of it, they're sellers, and there are a lot of teams, I promise, who are going to want Ryan Helsley at that time if he's pitching well. Of course, the gamble here is that he's staying healthy. Fetty's a no-brainer to me. I probably trade – I know you wrote about this too and talked about it on video, I believe. Yes. I'm trading Fetty in the offseason because I've got some young guns coming, And I like Fetty, but the reason they got him was to make a run last year. It didn't work. He's $7.5 million. Like that one to me, I'm finding a partner for him now and then letting some of my young guns take a shot at it. You can't tell me that, you know, Fetty is that important to the success of the club here in 2025. He's good. Don't get me wrong. He's a two. But, you know, he's not an ace. That's probably the move I make.
Yeah. I've wrestled with this too. I was a proponent of trading Helsley and Fetty before the season or early in the season if an opportunity arises, only because of the risk factor. Pitchers get hurt. Ryan Helsley has had injuries. Any guy throwing 99, 100 is almost like a ticking bomb or something. There's so many of those guys get hurt. So the risk factor is with both of these guys, all right, between now and the trade deadline, there is a risk that of both having an injury that would basically ruin their trade value or severely damage it. And the other risk is that they're not as good. Like, in other words, Fetty's coming off a career season. Helsley's coming off a career season. Fetty reinvented himself. Unbelievable what he did reshaping all his pitches. 330 ERA last year. And, you know, the ridiculous – look him up sometime in his game logs and look at how many times – and I wrote this down, but I can't remember it. How many times last season in a start he allowed no more than two runs, no more than three runs. But by holding on to him, let's take the injury factor out of it. By holding on to him, I know that there's got to be some teams out there that look in Fetty and say, you know, that's a heck of a story. And this guy reinvented himself in Korea. He's a much better pitcher, but he's only done it one time. Can he do it again? There might be some reservation. So maybe some teams, if he's going really, really well, maybe they'll say, okay, he's passed the test. He's doing it again. Then his value would be higher. But suppose he doesn't do it again, and suppose his performance really declines. Well, you're not going to get much for him at the deadline. So there's a good argument to be made both ways. There really is. If both of these guys are going really, really well when it gets to the All-Star break, right, there's no problems, everything checks out, teams get desperate, man. Yeah, there's so many teams, you know, so many teams think that they're contenders, and they get desperate, and they would be willing to overpay. Rosenthal made one good point that I don't think we've made, or let me say I haven't made enough. Another negative to holding on to them until the trade deadline is that teams that trade for them will not be able to make a qualifying offer to them. In other words, to where they would get draft pick conversation if they move on as a free agent. That may lower their trade value to some extent. So anyway, I hope I covered all that in the way that makes any kind of sense if you look at both sides of this issue.
This is the Gas House Gang from KMOX with Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Let me get back to Mozeliak for a minute because – obviously, he's, I wouldn't say a polarizing figure. Polarizing means that some people like him and some people don't. He has been heavily, heavily criticized here in St. Louis. I think you and I have taken a fair stance on Mo, looking at his entire body of work, but also pointing out when things don't go well. And I think Mo, behind the curtain, you know, I think publicly he's going to speak for ownership, also for himself. But he did say in that story with Ken that he represents ownership, that is accurate. So he would tell you behind the curtain some of the things, actually he's told us on the air, some of the things that he did not do well and he signings that didn't go his way. By and large, his trades have been pretty good. I think some of his signings have not, but you know, it's a gamble that you take when you're the front man. I look at this thing and I say, you know, he was hamstrung by the Arenado situation, and they did it to themselves. They lost some leverage, I believe, when they went out and said they were intending to trade him. Everybody in the world knew they were trying to trade him, and there wasn't a lot of demand. But mostly, they got, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of screwed by the fact that he couldn't be moved. It dragged out all offseason. He used the word frustrated to me on KMOX, and I know to others, over and over and over again. Every time I brought up Arenado, he said, to be honest, it's frustrating. This market is moving very slow. And this was alluding to the Bregman situation. It's just been one of those off seasons. The Cardinals, I wouldn't say, are in a bad situation here. They're in a very unusual situation here where you don't see this a lot, where teams want to get younger and give players pathways to play, but they still want to please their fans and be good. And on top of all of that, they have a change in leadership coming. And I do respect Mozeliak for this. He's going to take all the hits from here on out. Bloom's not going to talk. Bloom is not going to do, maybe once in a while, he might do a little something with the media, but I doubt it. I think that this is going to be Mozeliak. And I know Bloom is doing this out of respect, but this is also on purpose. Mozeliak's job is to do this. He's the president of baseball operations. So it's a very unique, unusual situation that they put themselves in. And I think along the way, you'll learn what Bloom is doing. You won't know everything because he's not going to necessarily be public about it. But Bernie, it's just the beginning, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes right now. I can't wait to get down there and walk the backfields and kind of observe the new instruction, talk to people, and understand what's going on. Because Bloom, I assure you, is busy. In fact, he has been for almost two years here since they went out and got him following 23.
I want to be clear about my feelings on one thing with the Nolan Arenado trade situation, okay? As you know, Tom, and people that follow me, whether reading me at Scoops Network or just what, you know, podcasts with Will Leach and doing the Gas House Gang, my own YouTube channel, right? If anybody has paid attention, they know that I've been very hard on John Mozeliak. Like, I haven't hesitated to criticize and bring to light the things I think he screwed up, okay? And I think he's owned it. You know, he doesn't always, you know, the messaging has been a problem with the Cardinals for a long time. But anyway, I am adamant on one point, and there is no one who can change my mind, period. I don't blame John Mozeliak like one bit for the Arenado situation. Arenado gave him five teams. Dodgers didn't want him. Padres can't spend. They have a freeze on payroll. They didn't want him. Boston wanted him, but Alex Bregman was a higher priority, and they waited. The New York Yankees really have to watch their money because they don't want to cross into that next level of the payroll tax threshold. The Yankees, from what was reported in New York, tried to say, well, yeah, we're interested in him, but only if you take Marcus Stroman. And I've said so many times, and what stuns me is that people disagree with this. It's like, wow. It's like, well, why wouldn't they do that? Number one, because he's in significant decline. Number two, he can't stay healthy. Number three, not always the best guy in the clubhouse. This is a guy who reported late to training camp this year because he was pouting because they moved him to the bullpen last year. Oh, and then there's this little thing. Every one of us, fans included, we all squawk and holler about, you got to make room for these young players, these young pitchers, Matthews, McGreevy. So why in the world could some of the same people then turn around and say, well, oh, yeah, they should go get Stroman. Oh, so you want to bring in another starter, another mediocre starter? Who is a little inconsistent in terms of being a good clubhouse guy. Oh, you want to bring in another mediocre pitcher to block the path of Quinn Matthews, Michael McGreevy, and who else? How in any universe does that make sense? So anyway, Mo had five teams to work with. Three of the teams were non-starters. One was waiting for Bregman, Boston. And the fifth team, one that Arenado actually said, yeah, I'll go to Houston. He had a deal. He made a deal. The only thing left to make it official was Arenado saying, yeah, okay, I'll go to Houston. And even though Arenado had Houston on his approved trade list, he said no. How can I say hell?
Yeah,
sure. I think I'll say hell. How in the hell was that John Mozeliak's fault? And again, I do not hesitate to bang on Mozeliak with criticism when I think it's warranted, but I try to be fair anyway. And I do think, real quick, and this is related, I do think that, like, one of the things in Ken Rosenthal's piece in The Athletic, it was a good reminder. Again, we know this, but it was a good reminder. I do think if Sonny Gray had said, yeah, you know, you can look around, like Arenado, tell me what's out there. If Contreras has said the same thing, because they both have no trade clauses, I think it's a whole different offseason if both of those guys or one of those guys would have said, yeah, I'm interested in being traded, so see what's out there for me, you know. But they said, no, we want to be part of this. We want to help you transition with these young guys. Sonny Gray takes pride in leadership. Contreras, I think, is epitomizes everything I like about Cardinals baseball when it's right. He cares deeply. He's passionate. He's intense. He likes to help young players. So it was sort of a dead end in a way, or it was destined to be a little bit of a dead end when Gray and Contreras said, no, we don't want to be traded. So Mo was in a tough spot. Now, the only thing I'll say is that, you know, they're in a tough spot because of their own making, because they let the farm system fall apart and they had to, like, go out and make all these short-term moves that didn't quite pay off. So they're responsible for being in that spot. But once they were in the spot, it was kind of tough to maneuver your way out unless you were committed to spending all kinds, a fortune of free agent contracts, which to me they weren't going to do, and it would have been stupid in this situation to do it. But they weren't going to do it anyway, so any discussion of that is immaterial.
It's the Gas House Gang from KMOX with Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. The Cardinals are taking on the Astros right now. Fetty giving up a home run to Paredes.
Uh-oh. There goes his trade. There goes his trade value.
It's a 1-0 lead, last I checked, for the Astros, bottom of the second. Fetty still pitching in that game. Tomorrow's Michaelis. Sunday is Matt's. Now, don't get too all wound up if Michaelis gives up a bunch of runs. Understand that these pitchers, I know that we all pay close attention to every start and they're important, but spring training is training. And they are just trying to get work at this point. They're trying different pitches. If they get bombed tomorrow and Sunday, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. What I'm going to be watching for is how they make it through spring training health-wise, and then that first month, very, very important for Miles Michaelis in my book. He needs to get off to a really good start. And so does Matt's, granted that Matt's is healthy coming out of spring training. And then you start to think about the McGreevies and the Matthews and anybody else that might be able to jump in there. I think it's worth watching this weekend to see how those two, there'll be a lot written and said about Michaelis and Matt's.
Yeah, I'm always interested in what they do. We had a comment from one of our viewers, and thank you very much, who made the point, well, they still could have traded Matt's. They could have designated Michaelis for assignment. They could have traded, you know, Fetty and Helsley. Number one, I think most of us agree that they could have and I think should have traded Helsley and Fetty. So number one, we covered that. Number two, I'm pretty sure that if the phone would have if John Mozeliak checked his email, as he did incessantly during the offseason, and some team said, you know, but what are your thoughts on trading Steven Matz? You think who in their right mind would think that John Mozeliak would, like, basically not respond to the email and then ghost the team that reached out to him, right? Really, do you really think? I mean, some of the criticism is just mind-boggling. And the other thing is that, Michaelis is going to be a burr in the saddle, so to speak. Here's what I've said, Tom, in case anyone interested. I think it was unrealistic to expect them to designate him for assignment before the season starts. I do think that if for whatever reason he pitches a little better this year, because he will give you innings, there might be some trade interest and he might be interested in going somewhere. The other thing, and this is the big thing, if he's just getting punched out, mm-hmm, all the time, and you're rolling into June, you know, I think you have to designate him for assignment because at that time, I think Matthews will be ready. And I think McGreevy's already ready. So, yeah, I think a DFA thing is a good hypothetical to talk about. But I think it would come later if they're going to do it at all.
You know, the other guy who is going to be interesting here is Matthew Liberatore. Liberatore came in for Pallanta the other day and looked freaking phenomenal. I mean, this dude, and by the way, he is 25. He's not a baby anymore. Yeah. He's growing into being a big leaguer. I spent a little time with him during the Cardinals caravan. I actually was taken aback how intelligent he is. You know, I hadn't really spoken to him at length like that, but just, you know, conversations on the bus and whatnot. The guy's a deep thinker, but not in like a, you know, gets in his own head kind of way. Like, he loves to read about motivation, leadership, philosophical, you know, ways different people look at that. And then he goes out and executes. I mean, the guy brings it. He's got a great fastball, great mentality. And I think that a relief duty for him actually was a terrific thing for him. I mean, every pitcher wants to be a starter. Well, they all begin as starters. Right. And then that's kind of what they know. But coming out of the pen and just letting it rip, I thought was very good for him. So I'm very curious here because they keep mentioning that, well, we have to look. Ollie Marmol was quoted as saying, we need to look at what our short-term and long-term organizational goals are. But they're kind of dangling it out there that Liberatore could enter this rotation at some point, whether it's this year or next year. He factors right into their future, I do believe.
Well, no doubt about it. And when Ali said that, you know, my read on what he was saying, maybe I'm misinterpreting it. I don't think so. Short term, long term. It also includes Heim Bloom being the boss next year. Heim Bloom drafted Matthew Liberatore. Heim Bloom is a huge, listen, I've talked to some people down there who cover the team. I don't have any direct sources at Tampa Bay, but Mark Topkin and some others who know everything about that team. They said Heim Bloom, they really needed Randy Arozarena because they thought he had a chance to be special. The Cardinals obviously blew that one as far as evaluating Arozarena. But it really pained Bloom to trade Liberatore because he thought the guy had a chance to be really, really, really good. So, listen, the Cardinals have kind of screwed up because they can't decide whether Libby is a starter reliever, starter reliever, starter reliever. And if they would just like let him pitch in one role, I think he would have gotten better over time. And he has as a reliever. But I think all bets are off when Heim Bloom takes over this thing with regards to Liberatore, because he is a huge Liberatore fan and he drafted him as a starter and he believed he would be a starter. And if anyone's trying to be fair about this, he never really had a fair chance to be a starter here. That's just the way the circumstances were.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, he's been guided along by Sonny Gray. He told me that Sonny has really taken him under his wing. And, you know, if you've been paying attention to Sonny, this is like, he's like a pitching coach, you know, in the making. I mean, he's out there gathering the guys around. All right, boys, here's what I do. I throw this in this situation. Watch this. Like during his sessions, he's talking, he's explaining afterwards what he did and why, and he remembers everything. And I think someone like Liberatore is a perfect match for him. So I'll be very curious to see how that moves along. Byrne, what you got coming up on YouTube in terms of videos?
I got one today where I'm going to talk about the Cardinals. The biggest thing they can do under the new regime is to restore the fact that they can develop young starting pitching. And they're starting to a little, you know, Matthews and McGreevy. But I looked some stuff up about their draft and how many starting pitchers actually did anything after a certain point of time. It's depressing, actually. And then to me, it's the biggest, single most important thing they got to do stepping forward. And I also, you know, there's been some comments made by former Cardinals pitchers, young pitchers, that I'm going to also include in that video to show you kind of how screwed up the player development system has been. So thanks for letting me plug that. So that'll be up in a couple hours.
And that is the most important thing going on here we have to keep in mind. Could the Cardinals win this division? Might be a long shot, but it's a division that could be gettable. Everything's got to come together. But what absolutely is going to have to happen from this point forward is that they redo the player development system. And that is, in progress. And I think that's the biggest picture of all. And I really look forward to seeing what is said about all of that. Bernie, it is always a treat to spend some time with you talking some ball. What a beautiful day. Hope everyone gets outside a little bit
right.
and hangs out here in St. Louis and beyond.
And just before I go, one more time, go to Saliga Heating and Cooling. Check out all their services. Check out the Priority Club. They will take great care of you. They're fantastic. Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Tell us a little bit more about them, actually, before we go, if you wouldn't
mind. The Priority Club, I want you to check into that. We're members. We have been for several years. We've saved money. We've also had a peace of mind. What they do is they come out twice a year and they check your equipment. They make sure everything's working as it should. Everything's in good shape. If it's a little problem, they'll catch it before it becomes a big problem and an expensive problem. So by being on this maintenance program, you not only know that you're all set for the scalding summer and the really cold dead of winter, you'll have the peace of mind of knowing everything's working, depending whatever season it is. The other thing, they can extend the life of the equipment you have by catching these little problems and also just by doing regular maintenance. Therefore, your equipment lasts longer and you're not spending money. You're getting extra years out of your equipment. So check out the Priority Club. Go to SaligaHeatingCooling.com.
This is the time of year. We're going to start getting warm. You got to get that air conditioner back. For Bernie Miklas, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks for our producer, Drew Young's great efforts. And we will see you Monday on the Gas House Gang.